All right. Good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So first of all, an incredible yashar koach to everyone for coming out this morning. And this is our last class for this particular semester. And although I know that this is a Tehillim shir, but I happened to come across something that I just thought was very riveting on the parsha. And given the fact that I'm not giving my Wednesday night parsha shir for a couple of weeks, I figured, well, you'll forgive me a little bit for this last class and we'll focus a little bit on the parsha. But I think as you've come to see that the themes in Torah span across all of the svarim of the Torah. So the themes of the Chumash, the themes of Tehillim are the themes of life. And the themes of life are the same. It's just a question of where you choose to extract the lesson from. So let's take a look at number one. So I think we come across at the end of, well, towards the beginning of Parashas Vayechi, I should say, an incredibly dramatic and overwhelming episode. So the Torah says, so just to paint the picture, Parashas Vayechi, Yaakov Avinu is now living in Egypt for the last 17 years of his life. He's now going to die. Remember, again, there's an important piece of information. The Gemara says that until Yaakov Avinu, there was no choli, there was no sickness. Now, what that means is there must have been sickness, meaning people got ill. What it meant was that when people died, they just died. Yaakov Avinu was the first one to have a prolonged illness prior to death. And the Gemara understands that to be, interestingly enough, as a form of bracha, as a form of blessing. So we can understand that. Why is illness before death a form of blessing? Because when a person has an awareness that the end is coming, that the end is coming near, it gives them an opportunity to prepare, to do what they have to do, to get their affairs in order, to get their family in order before leaving this world. And the truth is, when you look at Parashas Vayechi, that's exactly what it is. It's Yaakov Avinu getting his affairs in order before he leaves this world. It's the conversations, and really, the truth is, most of it are the conversations with his sons that perhaps he really should have had a little bit earlier on, a number of years earlier, but didn't, for the same reason that many families have conversations that we need to have, but we don't have. Yaakov Avinu has those conversations with his children on his deathbed. So that's the context over here. So the pasuk says in number one, V'ata shnei banecha noldim lecha b'eretzayim ad bo'i alechem mitzrayim alihem. So the first thing Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef is the sons that you had in Egypt before I came to you, Lihem. Lihem means literally they're mine. I'm counting them as part of the Shvatim, as part of the tribes of Israel. Ephraim u'Menashe keruvein v'Shimon yihiyu li. Ephraim and Menashe ultimately again will take their place amongst the tribes, just like Reuven and Shimon. So why does Yaakov Avinu do this? Why does he do this? What would you say? So first of all, it makes everybody equal, right? Because it has to be 12 tribes, okay? It's a simpler idea. Remember again, to a certain degree, Yosef is Yaakov's firstborn. Why is he Yaakov's firstborn? Because he's the firstborn of Rachel, who was the intended wife of Yaakov. Understand, so much of the struggle between Yosef and his brothers was not really between Yosef and his brothers, but it was the inherent struggle between Rachel and Leah. It was the fact that Rachel was the chosen wife and Leah was not. Leah becomes the dominant mother, the dominant maternal presence in the home, even though, again, she was never the intended wife. There is this struggle. Why does Yaakov Avinu get Yosef the beautiful coat? Yaakov doesn't know about playing favorites with kids. Everybody knows about playing favorites with kids, right? The idea is because in Yaakov's mind, Yosef was a bechor. Yosef was a firstborn. So what's happening over here is part of Yosef's firstborn identity. The Torah says, what happens to a firstborn son? He gets pishnayim, he gets a double portion. Yosef's double portion comes in the following way. Interestingly enough, we know Yosef, unlike his brothers, is not a tribe. There is no tribe of Yosef. But what does Yosef get? Instead of Yosef being one tribe, Yosef becomes two tribes. They're just not called Yosef. They're called Ephraim and Menashe. So this is what is happening over here on Yaakov Avinu's deathbed. He's giving Yosef Pishnayim, the double portion. They will not be a tribe of Yosef. Instead, you become Ephraim and Menashe. Good. Pasuk, source number two. Vayikach Yosef es shneim es Ephraim mino mismolo liYisrael mi Yisrael mismol Yisrael es Menashe mismolo mimin Yisrael vayageshlof. So what happens? Yosef wants to bring his sons for a bracha from Yosef's father, the boy's grandfather. So remember again, number one, we are told about the incredible blessing that Yosef just received. His sons become tribes. Yosef gets his double portion. Section source number two, Yosef wants his sons to receive a bracha. So remember again, Menashe is the older son, Ephraim is the younger son. So Yosef brings Menashe on Yosef's left so that he will be under Yaakov's right hand, and Ephraim will be under Yaakov's left hand. The idea being the right, I'm a lefty, so it hurts me to say this, but the right always has dominance, right? The right is important. Therefore, again, he puts the Bechor, the older son, under Yaakov's right hand, Menashe under the right hand, Ephraim under the left hand, and that's how the bracha is going to go. We know what happens. Number three. So what happens? Yaakov Avinu switches his hands. He switches his hands, and he puts his right hand, the dominant hand, on the younger son, Ephraim, and his weaker hand, his left hand, over the older son, Menashe. Number three. Vayar Yosef kiyoshis aviv yad mino rosh Ephraim, vayera be'enov. So this, by the way, in and of itself, although this is not even our topic for today, but this is an incredibly dramatic pasuk. Why is this a dramatic pasuk? What's Yosef's reaction to his father's actions? Yosef's reaction to his father's actions? Now, not only was he not happy, vayera be'enov. Vayera be'enov means Yosef thought that his father was doing something bad. This is bad. Not only does he think it's bad, but he does something dramatically amazing. Vayismoch yad aviv lahasir also me'arosh Ephraim. He's so upset that what does he do? Yosef goes and moves his father's hands. Like, he doesn't say, "Dad, are you a little bit confused? Do you think?" Because remember again, Yaakov Avinu was already a little bit blind, so maybe you don't see so well. He doesn't say anything. He is so bothered by what he sees, that he goes over to the hands of his father and begins to switch them back. So of course you have to understand from Yosef's perspective, the last time Yosef saw an act of favoritism, it didn't end well. Right? It didn't end well. So Yosef also has like a little bit of PTSD. You know, remember again, he saw this. He knows what happened the last time he got a nice coat from his father. The brothers, it was over. It was over. It was a 22-year plus nightmare. So Yosef, on a basic level, sees, oh my gosh, my father is about to do this with my own kids. He's about to go ahead and create a favoritism. And he's about to upend the order. Remember again, why was there so much negativity between Yosef and his brothers? It's not just the pshat that Yaakov was playing favorites. But what happened? Yaakov took a younger child and catapulted him in prominence above all of the older children. Meaning, I think, for example, let's say, had Yaakov made Reuven his favorite, had Reuven been the favorite, would there have been animosity in the family? I don't think so, right? Maybe there'd be a little bit of like negative feelings, but not as much. He's the firstborn. Okay, the firstborn always occupies a different kind of status. But to take the second to youngest child, right, and to go ahead and catapult him to prominence above all of the other brothers. So what's happening over here? Yosef sees that the younger son, Ephraim, is being catapulted in importance above Menashe. Very upset. He goes to move his father's hands. What's Yaakov's response? So first, then, after he tries to move his hands, then Yosef says something. Vayomer Yosef al aviv lo kein aviv kizeh b'char sim yimincha rosho. Tells Yaakov, father, I think you're making a mistake. Put your right hand on the older son, on Menashe. Vayima ein aviv. Yaakov refused to move his hands. Vayomer yadati bini yadati. I know my son. I know what I'm doing. Gam hu yela'am. The gam hu yigdal. Your older son, Menashe, is going to be great. He's going to be great. He's going to be very successful. V'ulam achiv hakaton yigdal mimenu v'zaro yiyem lo agoyim. But the reality is, your younger son Ephraim will become greater than your older son Menashe. Now the truth is, remember, this is not actually a reference to the boys themselves, but rather, what is it a reference to? Their descendants. So remember, again, Menashe would have some great descendants, but the truth is, Ephraim has one exceptionally, meaning a number of important descendants, but an exceptionally important descendant, Yehoshua. Right? Yehoshua is the descendant, the one who takes over from Moshe Rabbeinu, comes from Ephraim. So Yaakov says to Yosef, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. They're both going to be great. They're both going to be wonderful. But your younger son will dominate, ultimately, again, the older one. So, in the end of number three, Vayivarchim bayomahu leimor, Becha yivarech Yisrael leimor, Yisimcha Elokim ke Ephraim lechi Menashe, Vayosem es Ephraim lifnei Menashe. So what happens? Yaakov Avinu blesses the boys on that day, saying, Becha yivarech Yisrael. Now, what does that phrase mean? Literally translated, with you, Israel will bless. So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says in number four, Becha yivarech Yisrael, what does that mean? Habol levarech esbanav. If someone wants to bless his sons, Yivarchim bebirchasam v'yomer ish libno, Yisimcha Elokim ke Ephraim nechemenasha. Yaakov Avinu makes a dramatic statement. That's for all future generations. When we bless our sons, we should tell them that Hashem should make you ke Ephraim lichi Menashe, vayosem es Ephraim lifnei Menashe. And of course, Yaakov places Ephraim before Menashe. Incredible, incredible psukim. The drama is palpable, and the truth is even a bit overwhelming. So what I want to try to focus on this morning a little bit is why. Why do Ephraim and Menashe serve as the paradigmatic examples for what we want our children to be? Remember, how much do we know about Ephraim and Menashe? Exactly. Very little, right? Almost nothing about them. We know they're born in Egypt. There's a couple of veiled references to them from a couple of different places. But at the end of the day, we know very little about Ephraim and Menashe. We know about their descendants, that we do know about. But about them as people, very little. Yet here, Yaakov Avinu not only blesses them. Remember, there's a number of things happening over here. There's Yaakov Avinu placing prominence on Ephraim before Menashe. Both sons will be great. The younger son will be even greater. But that's not the end of the story. Yaakov Avinu then says, for all generations, Becha Yivarech Yisrael, when we bless our sons to this very day, how do we bless our children? Yisimcha Elokim, Ke Ephraim v'chimenasha. My sons, the sole aspiration I have for you is that you should be like Ephraim and Menashe. And the question is obvious. Why is this the bracha? Why is this the bracha? I could have come up, meaning if I was on the committee for brachas, right? I would have said I could come with some much better ones. First of all, again, make it like we do for the girls, right? Yisimecha Elokim ke Sara Rivka Racha v'Leia. Yisimcha Elokim ke Avram Yitzchak v'Yaakov. Moshe Aaron David Shlomo. Right? Make it like the Ushpizin. You know, whatever you want. I mean, there's plenty of people to choose from who we know much more about. And the truth is, to be honest, who have had a much more dramatic impact on the Jewish people than Ephraim and Menashe. Ephraim and Menashe's impact is not them. I mean, remember again, even when Yaakov says that Ephraim is going to be greater than Menashe, he didn't mean that Ephraim is going to be greater than Menashe. He meant that Ephraim is going to have greater descendants than Menashe. What do Menashe and what do Ephraim and Menashe accomplish themselves? I'm sure they accomplished many things. But clearly, the Torah did not feel the need to tell us about any of them. We do not know anything about Ephraim and Menashe except that they were born, that they were named, that they were blessed by their grandfather. That's it. That's it. This is the last piece of information we hear about Ephraim and Menashe. Until 120, until they leave this world. We hear nothing else about them. Yet, they serve as the paradigmatic examples as to who we want our sons to be. Every parent, when they give their child the bracha, says, I want you to be like Ephraim and Menashe. So we're going to try to investigate a little bit this morning as to why. Right? What is the importance of Ephraim and Menashe? Why are they the paradigmatic examples of who we want our children to become? So there are a number of different answers. This, obviously, you can imagine, is a very troubling question. A very troubling question. A very difficult question. So I'll share with you a number of answers, some of which I'm sure you're already familiar with. If you take a look at number five, in the Sefer Igra Dekala. Igra Dekala was written by Ratzvi Elimelech Shapira of Dinov. And he writes as follows. He says a very beautiful and profound answer. If you look number five, three lines in right after the periods there. Vini Yaakov Avinu, Kaasher Sames Ephraim Lefnei Menashe, Ra'a Be'Ephraim Shlo Nisga'e Betova, Rak Adraba, V'Rabbe Menashe Shlo Niskana Be'Ephraim, So says the Gemara, the Kal, something so beautiful. He says actually it was a progression. Really what was happening in the Pasuk was like this. There was one thing Yaakov Avinu wanted to accomplish, which was to bless his grandsons. In a moment of dramatic surprise to everyone gathered, he switches his hands, putting his right hand on the younger grandson Ephraim and his left hand on the older grandson Menashe. Why the switch? Very simple. Ephraim was going to be greater than Menashe. And in that moment, Yaakov Avinu sees something dramatically amazing in his grandsons. He sees that Ephraim does not lord over his older brother. Or his sibling rivalry is a natural thing, right? The Chumash talks about it, which means that it's natural. So you would think that a younger brother is just told by the Zayda that what? That what? That he's going to be greater, than his older brother. Now remember, again, especially from a biblical perspective, the Bechor is always the most important member of the family. He is de facto the most important child. So you would think a younger brother, Ephraim, is told that he's going to be greater than his older brother, Menashe. You would have thought that his demeanor would change. His disposition would change. But Yaakov saw that it didn't. You might have thought that an older brother, upon hearing that his younger brother was going to ultimately become greater than him, would be upset, would be demoralized, would be crushed, and yet he wasn't. Ephraim did not take his newfound greatness to lord over his older brother, and the older brother Menashe did not in any way begrudge his younger brother's newfound greatness. Yaakov Avinu sees this, and he says, "Bicha yivarech Yisrael lemar yisimcha Elokim ke'efraim chemenashe." What do we want more than anything for our children? Right? So really, what do we want on a basic level more than anything for our children? To get along. Right? That's true. That's what every parent, at the end of the day, of course I want my children to succeed. I want them to be spiritually successful, materially successful. That's great. At the end of the day, what's most important from a parent's perspective is to know that I raised a mishpacha where my children love each other and get along with one another. That, the truth is, that is the hallmark of parental accomplishment. If your children want to be around one another and want to be around you as a parent, right, then that is, I don't mean your in-law children, I mean like you're not, right? That is the hallmark of parental accomplishment. So therefore, Yaakov Avinu says, this is how parents have to bless their children. What do we tell our children every single Shabbos night? Yisimcha Elokim ke'efraim chemenashe. Be happy for each other's successes. Even if your sibling eclipses you in certain ways, even if your sibling becomes greater than you, if you're the sibling who's encountered success, never hold that success over the head of the siblings who are less successful. And if you're the sibling who is a bit less successful, be happy for the accomplishments of the other. You know, we like to say that we are happy for other people's successes. But we're amongst friends, so we can speak openly and honestly. We're often very jealous of other people's successes. And by the way, it's okay. How do you know it's okay? HaKadosh Baruch Hu never gives us a mitzvah. Let me say it differently. God never prohibits something unless he knows that we have a propensity towards it. So there is a reason that the last commandment is lo sachmod, not to covet. Why? Because the Kaddish Baruch Hu realized it is natural and normal to be jealous of people. When I see someone who is having more success than me, I feel jealous. When I see someone who has more aslacha than me, it's just, that's normal. I also want to be successful. We all want to be successful in life. So when I see someone, but here's the interesting part, is often remember, you're never jealous. You're never jealous of someone who you have absolutely no shaykhus with, right? You ever notice, by the way, that the people who win, like, the big lotteries are, like, the people from, like, some place in West Virginia, right? Who happen to be picking up, like a six-pack of beer and a lottery ticket, right? And remember, like, this brother gives them this muscle. It's incredible. So no one ever says, I can't believe it happened to that person. That should have been me. No one ever has that reaction. Why? Why not? But because I have no relationship to that person. I don't relate to that person, right? It's just, we don't live in the same world. Okay, I would like it to be me. I could dream about it being me. But I don't begrudge that person's success. Where jealousy comes in is with your brother, is with your sister, is with your neighbor, is with the people who are right now, who live in the same world as you do. And when you see them being successful and you're not, it hurts. It hurts. And this is everything. This is, they're marrying off their children and I'm not. They have parnasa and I don't. They have hatzlacha and I don't. They have a happy marriage and I don't. Because those are the people who are in my orbit. So it's natural to be jealous of them. So when Yaakov Avinu sees that his grandsons, one, the younger son, has clearly been catapulted to a level of success, and the younger and the older one has been relegated to a lower level, there's no animosity. There is no animosity. Menashe is happy for Ephraim. Menashe is happy for his younger brother. Right? And ultimately, Ephraim still conducts himself with integrity and respect towards his older brother. Yaakov Avinu says, the ability to be happy for the success of the other and the ability to never use your success to look down on the other, that is the highest level of blessing that we can convey to our children. Isn't that incredible? Right? We often think that the best parental blessing is you should be a Talmud Chacham. You should marry a Talmud Chacham. You should be wealthy. You should be a Baal Tzedaka. You should be... Yaakov says, I want to tell you the greatest bracha you can give your children. And by the way, when we speak about bracha, we give our children. Understand, in order to give a bracha, what must happen? You must live those very traits yourself, right? Remember again, to give a bracha, right? To tell my kid, it's just like any time, by the way, you try to tell your children to do something and you don't do it, better off not saying it. It is the greatest level of parental hypocrisy. Whatever you want from your kids, you must live that before you preach that. It's Chinuch 101. Because children see right through hypocrisy. Children see right through when their parents are echad bapeh ve'echad balev. They say one thing, but they live a different way. Whatever you want for your kids, that's the way you have to live. So now, what Yaakov Avinu is saying is like this. What I really want for my children, not just to get along. You know, inevitably in life, even if you try to treat your children the same way, they're not going to be the same as life goes on. Inevitably, one will be more successful, less successful, and again, at different times in life. What do I want for my kids? Be happy for your brother's success. Be happy for your brother's success. And never use your success to look down on the other. That's the... And Yaakov Avinu... You see, what's amazing about the Igor de Kala, I just want to point out, is that Yaakov Avinu didn't plan this bracha. Right? He didn't plan this. The only thing he planned was that Ephraim is going to be greater than Menashe. That was... So he was going to give the bracha, the more prominent bracha to Ephraim. And that was the only thing. When he sees their reaction to what happened, he is astonished. He never saw this with his own kids. Never saw this with his own kids. But he sees it now with his grandsons. Ephraim is still reverential and respectful to his older brother Menashe. Menashe is happy for Ephraim's success. And in that moment, Yaakov Avinu has an epiphany. Bicha yivarech Yisrael leimar, yisimcha Elokim ke'Ephraim ke'Menashe. This is what every parent should wish for their children. Be happy for the successes of your brother, of your sister, and never use your successes to chas v'shalom look down on the other. Next, take a look at number 6. Does Naim LaTorah, Rav Sirotkin says something a little bit different. Rav Sirotkin writes, it's a little bit long, we're not going to do the whole thing, but he says something amazing. He says, think about this in just a moment. Who were Ephraim and Menashe? Who were they? Who were they? They were the sons of Yosef. Remember again, who is Yosef married to? Right? Yosef married into a very prominent Egyptian family. Very prominent, right? He marries Osnas, the daughter of Potiphar, Kohen On. So whether his father-in-law was some type of high-ranking Egyptian official or some type of high-ranking religious official, he marries a prominent woman from a prominent family. Menashe and Ephraim grow up with all of the privileges of Egypt. If you look at Rav Sirotkin, he says, Rav Raim Nasha, B'nei HaMishra L'melech Mitzrayim, Asher Kolei Chali Hamada Psuchim Lifneyem, V'chol HaMishra L'memeshala Pnuyot Ba'adam, V'chol Nesichim HaYichoshim Es'atzim L'Mishra. So remember again, Menashe and Ephraim, They grew up with every privilege. They lacked for nothing. Every opportunity in greater society was open to them. Yet, amazingly enough, the Gemara says, with all of this privilege, where did they go every day for the last 17 years? They went, the Medrash says, they went to learn. Actually, it's Gemara Masechta Sota. They went to Goshen to learn Torah with Yaakov. Every day, they went to learn with their Zeta. They went to learn with their grandfather. They went to Goshen. He goes on, he says, right? What was Goshen? What was Goshen? Goshen was the Lakewood of the Middle East, right? That's what, right? It was the Jewish ghetto, right? It was, again, it was the Jewish community that was there. So essentially what the Azamah Torah says is something absolutely amazing. Menashe and Ephraim were not the first children to grow up in an alien society. Remember again, who were the first children to grow up in an alien society? The tribes, the Shvatim, right? The Shvatim were born with Lavan. The Shvatim were all born with the exception of Binyamin, right? The Shvatim were all born outside of the land of Israel. They all grew up in an alien society. The difference was they were aliens in an alien society. When you are an alien in an alien society, by definition, you are on the outskirts. You're on the outs. Ephraim and Menashe were the first, quote-unquote, Jewish children born in an alien society where what? They were accepted and part of society. Right? Menashe and Ephraim were not outcasts. Everyone knew that Yosef was Jewish. But remember, Yosef was also the man who saved Egypt from famine. He was next to the Pharaoh. He was the most important person. His children were part and parcel of society. Ephraim and Menashe were the first Jews to grow up in a Gentile society where every single door was open to them. And with all of that, all that opportunity, they did not turn their back on their Yiddishkeit. With all of the opportunity, which I'm sure they took incredible advantage of, they did not. They went, they learned Torah every day with their grandfather in Goshen, and cultivated a meaningful religious and spiritual identity. So what's the message ultimately, again, according to the time that we give to our children? Yisim chalikim kefraim cheminasha. Being part of the world is an important thing. You know, all too often, this is not a topic for today, but I feel compelled to say it. All too often, we look at involvement in the world as like a bidyeved. If you can't make it in chinuch, in rabbanos, in klei kodesh, okay, fine, you'll be a frum balabas. Okay, you know what? No, hopefully your grandchildren will still be religious. Right? It's a terrible, terrible thing. It's a terrible thing on many levels. First of all, it's patently false. It's false, and it gives such a terrible feeling to those wonderful men and women who do go into the world and accomplish great things, like they're living bidyeved lives. It's not true. It's not true. The job of the Jew is to be an ar lagayim. So if a person chooses a life in Jewish communal service, fantastic. But if you go into the world and you make a difference and you are a captain of industry and you're honest and you sanctify the name of heaven and you're an ambassador for God, that is just as great of an accomplishment as being the most noted Torah educator, Rosh Yeshiva, Rebbe, or Rav. They are equal accomplishments. How do we know this? Because Yaakov Avinu sees his grandsons and he is amazed. He is amazed that they are in the world of Egypt, which Chazal tell us was a fairly decadent society, right? They had every single opportunity at their fingertips. You know, Rav Saratskin writes, can you imagine the shiduchim they were offered? Can you imagine the shiduchim they were offered? And by the way, not from nice monotheist girls, right? But probably, again, from Egyptian elite. Egyptian elite were probably, who wouldn't want to marry into the family of Yosef? With all of this privilege, with all of this opportunity, and despite being out in the world, they maintained a fidelity and an allegiance to their religious identity. So what do we tell our children every Shabbos night? Yisim chalakim kefraim cheminasha. Whatever you're going to do in life, make sure that your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with Torah, with mitzvos, and with Am Yisrael is ironclad. And lest you think that the only way to accomplish that is within the walls of the Beis Medrash, unequivocally and patently false. How do we know this? Yisimcha Elokim kefraim cheminasha. Ephraim and Manasseh teach us that we could be out in the world and still be passionate, enthusiastic, and successful Jews. Life is not an either or between societal immersion and success in your Judaism. You know, anybody who paints pictures of either or, it's always easy to see the world as black and white. The difficulty is the world is never black and white. Most times it's gray. And gray is the most difficult shade to live in because you're often not sure. Sure, it's easy to say you could only be from here, but not from here. It's much more difficult to say no. You could be immersed in society, obviously with boundaries, and in an appropriate way, and still be the greatest Tam Tchacham, the greatest Tzaddik, and the greatest righteous individual. That's the bracha we give to our children. But again, remember, brachos only work if you model them yourself. Do we model for our children a proper derech in societal immersion? This is incredibly important because so many times you see, there's a difference between what you do as an adult and what you do as a kid. And I think all of us know there are certain things that I'm okay doing myself that are not okay for my kids. The problem is, if we're honest with ourselves, we call that, once again, hypocrisy. I don't understand. If it's good enough for you, then why isn't it good enough for your kids? And if it's not good enough for your kids, then maybe you shouldn't be doing it either. And this is the difficulty. And this is what happens. See, what we don't realize, and I think this is why I got very excited about this topic, because I never thought about this until thanks to all of you, and I had to give this share. See about this, you know, we overthink of a bracha we give our children. But again, realizing the bracha is only impactful if you model the very thing that you are trying to convey to your children. If you're telling your children, be like this, that's not me. That's a hollow bracha. That's a hollow bracha. I can say to my children, I want you to be like me, but better. But I must embody those very principles. So I have to ask myself a very simple question. Do I have the proper balance of societal immersion? And this is incredibly difficult because the truth is, we are so immersed in greater society more than we even realize. And really, it's really a lot because of social media, because of the internet. We're involved and knowledgeable about things that we don't even realize we know when we're knowledgeable about. And a person has to have what they call, you know, proper digital citizenship. What am I allowing into my heart? What am I allowing into my life? What am I allowing into my home? What am I allowing into my car? What am I allowing into every area of life? I could be part of society. It is a privilege to be part of society. Understand that being a part of society means I have the ability to bring my Judaic identity and values, and I could bring them into the greater world and help shape things. And we never know how we shape things in the greater world. So being part of society is not a bidyeved. It's not, no, I couldn't make it anything else, I'll go inside. It's a privilege and it's an opportunity. But my level of societal immersion must balance and must take into account a preservation of my spiritual ideals. And maintaining that balance is often the greatest challenge in life. So what's the bracha we give to our children? There are two young men who are the personification or embodiment of this type of balance between societal immersion and spiritual preservation, Ephraim and Manasseh. So every single Shabbos, we tell our children, wherever life takes you, whether it's remaining in the Beis Medrash or going out into the world, make sure you maintain that proper balance. And I, as your parent, am committed to modeling that right type of balance as well. Take a look at number 7. And I just want to point out, as we often say, in these different approaches, they're all correct. So brachos might take a little bit longer with your kids on any given Shabbos night, not that you have to have all of this in mind. But the idea is also different things resonate with us at different times in life. So putting it all out there, if you look at number 7, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kohen Kuk says something so incredibly beautiful. If you look at number 7, so I apologize, I should have lettered the paragraph, but if you look, it's 5 lines in. 5 lines in the right-hand paragraph. I'm sorry about the smallness of the print as well. Aval Seder Mesiras HaBrachos Mesubach. Rav Tzvi Yehuda writes, you know, sometimes the way in which we give brachos is very often the pathway to bracha is misubach. Misubach means circuitous. circuitous. Vayishlach Yisrael simino vayashas arosh Ephraim hu atzayir vesmolo arosh Menashe shikel es yadav ki Menashe bechor lechora seder mesiras lechora seder mesiras abrachos ina kishura. So remember again, Yaakov gives the brachos. So what does he do? He switches his hands. Ask Rav Tzvi Yehuda, why is Yaakov deviating from the normal order? Take a look at the next paragraph. Yesh sug shal sadikim she'inam sovlim es hasibu chim shabedarche an hagas Hashem. Aval tzarech liskar shekol inyano shal Yaakov avinu malei sibuchim. Meireshes ad acharis. Hachel miyado chazes ve'ikav esav. The kalab shikos adav. This is an amazing observation. He says something amazing. He says, how does Yaakov Avinu's life begin? How does his life begin? With his hand, by holding onto the heel of Esav. And how does his life end? By the movement of his hands around his grandsons. He says something amazing. So I'll tell you this rest outside. Rav Tzvi Yehuda says something amazing. The pathway to greatness is filled with struggle. Greatness, the path to greatness, is never a direct road, right? It's never the yellow brick road that just goes straight, just follow it and you'll get till the end. The path to greatness always requires us to reach and to keep reaching. And sometimes one day reach in this direction, another day reach in that direction. That's the symbolism of the crisscrossed hands, right? The pathway to greatness is filled with so many ups and downs. And sometimes when you're going to try to become great, what's going to happen? Someone's going to step on you, right? And someone's going to push you down. And the only way to pull yourself up is to hold on to that person's heel and go up with the heel. And other times things will look one way, but then life has a way of switching things around. Says Rav Tzvi Yehuda so beautifully that ultimately, again, the crisscrossed hands represents the crisscross or haphazard or sometimes tumultuous nature of life. Life rarely follows a direct path. Life always follows the heel holding onto the heel of someone trampling on you, or ultimately, again, hands are reaching in different directions. An incredible metaphor for the lack of tranquility and straightforwardness in life. And this is incredibly important. Because what's the bracha we give to our children? You know, the most important thing in parenting is setting expectations. You know, I remember when my boys, who are now older, but when they were playing in one of the local leagues, they instituted this interesting practice that at the end of the season, everyone gets a trophy. Everyone gets a trophy. And I said to the person who runs this, I said, why? Why? He said, oh, we want all the kids to feel like winners. I said, great, but that's not life. There are winners and there are losers. And you win some games and you lose some games. And if you create an expectation that you get a trophy every single time, you're not doing something good for the kids. It's an incredible disservice. One of the most important life lessons is that sometimes you don't succeed. Sometimes you fail. Sometimes you're not the winner, you are the loser. But the question then is, what do you do after that? Right? So again, so the goal of life is, okay, you lost. You're going to get back on the field and you're going to try again. But if you quote unquote reward losing, just like you reward winning, then what type of expectation are you creating? They gave out the trophies anyway. But that's all right. But again, but that's symptomatic of the coddling nature of present-day society. Today, no one is allowed to feel bad. No one is allowed to be uncomfortable. Everyone has to be embraced, accepted, coddled, and put on a pedestal. And that's why, again, that's why other societies that don't do that are eclipsing our society in productivity, in accomplishment, in innovation, because if you coddle, people don't succeed. So what do we tell our kids? You know what happened to Ephraim Menashe? In literally 1 second, what happened to Ephraim Menashe? Menashe thought he locked in this thing as the firstborn. And then what happened in a matter of a moment? Ephraim is catapulted, Menashe goes down. So what happens? So it's not the pshat that, you know, the next day Yosef took Menashe to see his therapist. How does this make you feel? You know, how are you doing? You were the Bechor, now you're not the Bechor. Are you okay? Are you, how does that, you know, do you, whatever. He doesn't, not that there's anything with going to therapy, chas v'shalom, it's good. But the point over here is what happened? They rolled with the punches of life. sometimes so much of living is saying, okay, this is what it is, right? This is what it is. Now, how do I move forward, right? This is what happens. So Menashe, now you were the Bechor. Now you're kind of not the Bechor. Ephraim, you were the younger child. Now you are the Bechor. Okay, let's move. That's the way life is. You know, sometimes the greatest disservice we do to ourselves is we have an expectation that life is supposed to be easy. I don't know where it comes from, but you see, many of us walk around this. Life is supposed to be easy. Life is supposed to just follow that straight road. And when it doesn't, it throws us for such a loop. I can't believe this is occurring. Well, of course you can't believe it, because if your expectation for life is that it's smooth sailing, tranquil seas, from the moment you cry your first cry until you close your eyes at 120, then of course when you get that sucker punch for the first time of life failure, you're going to be like, oh my gosh, the sky is falling. But the sky is not falling. You have to readjust your expectation of life. Life is filled with ups and downs. There are wins and there are losses. There are trophies and there are not trophies. There are bechors and there are younger ones. There are times when you're first at, and there are times when somebody's trampling you on your heel. That's what Yaakov Avinu was trying to show his grandson. He moved, because remember, he could have just as easily done what with his grandsons? Could have just as easily done what? Just move them. Say, Ephraim, would you please come under my right hand? Menashe, can you please go under my left hand? He could have just said, he obviously knew where they were, but he purposely crisscrosses his hands, because that physical gesture is the symbolism for the sometimes crisscrossed nature of life. As Rav Tzvi Yehuda writes, life is male sibuchim, filled with different entanglements. Life is never a straight path. And the moment we adjust our expectation, that's why, by the way, you know, I've mentioned this before, the Arizal says, why is it that we cry at times of simcha? Think about it just a moment. Meaning crying is more often associated with grief. Yet again, we cry during times of happiness. And the more acute the happiness, the more intense the tears. So the Arizal says something amazing. He says, because in moments of simcha, the neshama knows deep down, this moment will not last. And there will be challenges to come. The neshama knows that life is cyclical like this. It's peaks and valleys. So in that moment of intense simcha, I would do anything to hold on to that moment for eternity. But I cannot. So the neshama cries because it realizes that today is simcha and tomorrow it might just be something else. But if you read, life is all about, I should say, successful living is all about adjusting your expectations. If you have expectations for smooth sailing, that leads to disappointment and disillusionment. But if you expect ups and downs, if you expect peaks and valleys, if you expect the crisscross nature of the hands of life, if you expect the heel at times, then you're prepared sometimes to win and sometimes to lose. And when I lose, it doesn't have to shatter my entire sense of self. When I lose, I just realize this is one of the valleys. Now my avoda, my job simply is pick myself back up and get back on the field. That was the message, ultimately, again, that Yaakov was giving to his son. So again, this is the bracha we give to our children. You're not always going to be a winner. You're not always going to be a winner. Life is filled with crisscrosses of nature. Malei sibuchim. Gird yourself with the strength that if you lose, to get back up and get back on the field. And the reason why this is incredibly important, because again, in order for this bracha to be effective, you have to model it for your children. One of the most important things that our children see is how we deal with stressful situations. How you deal with stress is one of the most important life lessons. And by the way, it's stress everywhere. How do you deal with traffic? How do you deal with traffic? Are you the weaver, right? Are you the hunker, right? Do you lose it? Do you lose it and only restrain yourself last minute because there's someone else in the car with you? Hey, or in general, that's a smaller example. Life is filled with stresses. Right? Am I the kind of person that when faced with stress, I shut down, the sky is falling? And we deal with stress in different ways for different reasons. But just understand, how you deal with the crisscrosses of life is what you're modeling for your children. So Shabbos night, I give my children the bracha, v'simcha l'kim k'afayim nesha. I'm telling them, my dear child, I hope that your life is filled with incredible success. But no, there will always be failures. There will always be valleys, not just peaks. And make sure you have the strength to get back on the field of life even the day after you lose the game. One last approach, and it kind of ties into this as well. Take a look at number A. So to appreciate this last approach, let's go back for just a moment. Because the last approach, which is really a little bit of a synthesis between the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Rav Hirsch, have this incredible idea. Remember, Yosef names his two sons Ephraim and Menashe. Ephraim and Menashe. So if you look at numbers 8 and 9, so the pause, Vayikra Yosef as Shema Bechor Menashe, Kinashani Elokim as Kamli as Kol Beis Avi. So Yosef names his oldest son Menashe, literally translated, for God has allowed me to forget all my toil and my father's house. Okay? Menashe, Nashani, to forget. God has allowed me to block out everything. If you take a look at number 9, so Veshim Hasheni Kara Ephraim, what's Ephraim? Ki Ephrani Elokim Be'eretz Anyi. God has allowed me to be successful in the land of my affliction. So the commentaries all point out this idea that what does it mean when Yaakovinu says God allowed me to forget my suffering, and my father's home? So first of all, it's not true. Yosef, first of all, you never really forget anything, let alone what happened to Yosef. He doesn't forget. And remember, again, not only does he not forget, but the Torah explicitly tells us that when Yosef sees his brothers, what does the pasuk say? What's his first reaction? Vayiskras chalomosav. He remembered his dreams. Now, Bepashtos, right, on a simple level, when he remembers his dreams, he's not just remembering his dreams. What else is he remembering? Everything else that was the aftermath of the dreams. Remember, again, the whole debacle in the family came about because of the dreams. So what does it mean that Yosef says that he forgot? So, of course, the simple answer is, not only that he forgot, but rather what? He compartmentalized, right? People who undergo trauma, this happens all the time. When a person undergoes trauma, you don't forget your trauma. Never forget your trauma. What you learn to do is you deal with your trauma. And one of the ways that happens is, in the immediate aftermath of trauma, the trauma is on the front of my mind. It's there all the time. And as time goes on, I compartmentalize the trauma. So I'm able to take the trauma from the front of my mind and move it somewhere to the recesses. And by the way, this is true with any kind of life trauma, loss, abuse, chas v'shalom, anything. When you first undergo it, it's front and center. But as time goes on, I'm able to compartmentalize and I'm able to go ahead and push it a little bit back so that it doesn't have to be the dominant thing on my mind all of the time. That's the pashup shop. But Rav Hirsch says something amazing. Take a look at number 10. This is a dramatic idea. Dramatic idea. Actually, I have to give credit. On the bus ride to the CMHS last week, Zevi Daniel told me this idea, which, and then I looked at it afterwards, it was incredible. It was worth it to go to CMHS just to hear this. So look what Rav Hirsch writes in number 10. He says, Nashani is usually translated, God has made me forget all my misfortune and my father's house. Whose heart does not turn within at this thought? Joseph calls his firstborn after the fact that God has allowed him to forget his old father and his family. First of all, Rav Hirsch is bothered by something else. You forgot your father? Forget about the brothers. You forgot your father, which is part of a whole discussion as to why Yosef doesn't contact his family during all of those years, but not our topic. Rav Hirsch goes on, he says, skip down to, it's the 7 lines down in number 10. Fortunately, however, to forget is not the only meaning of nosha. Nosha means to be a creditor. To be a creditor. And nashani could just as well mean God has made my misfortunes and my family into creditors. What had seemed to me hitherto misfortune and mishandling, God has made the means to my attaining the greatest joy, so that I am deeply indebted to my misfortune and my family. This is absolutely wild. So Rav Hirsch says, Nashani, ki Nashani Elokim has called me the Kalbis, doesn't mean God allowed me to forget my suffering and my family, but rather God has made my family and my suffering into my creditor. What is a creditor? What is a creditor? On a very simple level, what's a creditor? Is a lender, right? I go to the bank. I want to start the business. The bank loans me $1 million, startup capital, right? I am the debtor and the bank is the creditor. The bank has given me the means to do something spectacular and amazing. Yosef HaTzadik says, Kinashani Elokim eskol amali veskol beisavi. My suffering, my adversity, my difficulty, my family, they're my creditors. What does he mean, my creditors? What they did to me gave me the startup capital to accomplish something great in life. I am who I am, not despite my suffering. I am who I am because of my suffering. Without what I had, without going through what I had to go through, I would have never become the man I am today. It's not just that I survived this. All of this was necessary for the creation of the identity that I have today. I'm stronger today because of my family and my suffering. I have accomplished things because of my family and my suffering. I don't want to forget them. I don't need to forget them. No, I don't need to forget them. I'm indebted to them. I'm indebted to them. I'm not happy with what my brothers did to me, right? I don't know that I would ask for it again, but now that it happened the way that it happened, they are my creditors. They gave me, amazing, they gave me the startup capital for successful living. So when Yosef names his first son, Menashe, he has this incredible epiphany. The pain that I was running from all of those years, I don't have to run from it anymore. I embrace it. Because that pain is the startup capital for who I have become. That pain was the investment my family and my circumstances made in me to self-actualize. Without all of that startup capital of my brother's mistreatment and animosity, without all the startup capital of all of my suffering, I would have never become the man I am today. Someone just this morning after davening shared with me a most incredible quote. It was Hashkacha Pratis. Listen to this quote. It's from a basketball coach. I forgot, I forgot the name. But here's the quote. If you learn to use it right, this is the English you use. If you learn to use it right, the adversity will buy you a ticket to a place you couldn't have gotten to any other way. One more time. If you learn to use it right, the adversity will buy you a ticket to a place you couldn't have gone any other way. Yosef says it a bit more eloquently. Kinashani Elohim es kolam alives kol beis avi. My suffering, it's not just the pshat that I made it. It's that I recognize that all of my life circumstances were necessary in order for me to become the man I am today. Because adversity and difficulty and challenge pushes us to places that we would have never gone on our own. Think about it for just a moment. Would Yosef ever have become the leader he became if he was home? Think about this just a moment. We don't think about this. What would Yosef have become had he stayed in the family of Yaakov Avinu? What would he have become? Another son. His brothers were older than him. His brothers were stronger than him. His brothers would have definitely eclipsed him, right? Interestingly enough, he would have never risen to greatness in Canaan. It is only because he is cast out of the family that he becomes great. And by the way, sounds a lot like whose story? Good, it's a Tehillim show, so I have to make some reference, right? It's the same story of David HaMelech. David HaMelech, when he's home, when he's with his brothers, totally eclipsed. Only once he ventures out onto the battlefield all by himself to confront Goliath, to confront Goliath, does he rise to prominence. You see, some people only find their greatness when they're cast out of everything they know, everything that is familiar, and they are forced to sink or swim. See, all of those years when Yosef was in prison, in the pit of Potiphar, he did not understand this. He did not understand this. I guarantee you there was one question going through Yosef's mind all of those years, which was, why? Why did my family do this to me? Why did God do this to me? But then something amazing happens. When he rises to prominence, saves Egypt and much of the Middle East from regional famine, when he shows people that you could be part of society and still maintain a fidelity and allegiance to your Judaic values and morals, he has his first child and he has this epiphany. All of that suffering, that was my creditor. All of the suffering gave me the investment capital to become the person I need to become. And without it, I would have never accomplished any of this. And that's why he names his second son Ephraim. Ki Ephrani Elokim be'eretz ani. Once I begin to look at my suffering, not as a punishment, and once I begin to look at my suffering, and instead of always asking why, which is a great question, but one that does not have an answer, but instead try to figure out what should I do with all of these circumstances, I could be successful anywhere. I could be successful even in the land of my affliction. But now we come to something amazing. And now herein lies the disagreement between Yaakov and Yosef. So Yosef, remember, names his sons in a very specific order, right? He could have named the older one Ephraim also. But Yosef's mahalach in life is as follows. First in life, you have to deal with your pain. If you don't properly deal with your pain, you can't move forward. So Menashe must come before Ephraim. That's how it works. Kinashani Elokim es kalam ali is the epiphany that says that I processed my pain. I'm not going to ask why. I'm going to ask what should I do with these circumstances. I accept the fact that adversity gives me a ticket to a place I could have never gotten to on my own. After I shift my thinking, then I can be successful. And when Yaakov Avinu blesses the boys, he says, my dear Yosef, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you more than any of my other sons. But I have to disagree with you. Menashe doesn't come before Ephraim. Ephraim comes before Menashe. For most of us, it's hard to shift thinking. It's hard to shift perspective. It is much easier to shift behaviors. But once I shift behaviors, it becomes much easier to influence the way that I think. So Yaakov Avinu says, Ephraim comes before Menashe. What's Ephraim? Excuse me. Ki Ephrani Elokim be'eretz ani. God has made me successful, right? The shoresh of the word Ephraim, or the name Ephraim, is pri, produce fruit. Sometimes in life, when you're in a bad spot, when you're in a bad spot in life, so it's tempting to wallow in it, to lose yourself in it. And at a certain point in time, you just fall into the abyss of sadness and lose yourself in it. What do you do when you find yourself in the midst of adversity? Do something positive and dynamic. Move yourself forward. Figure it out. Do something. Don't allow yourself to wallow in despair. Don't allow yourself to lose yourself in your pain. Do something productive and dynamic. Is that productive, dynamic thing going to change your circumstances? Not necessarily, but what does it show? It shows that even with all of my adversity, I can still self-actualize, I can still go on to do great things. And when you prove that to yourself, then what? Then you will be able to reframe your life circumstances. That suddenly, again, I'm not the victim of my circumstances. But in fact, my circumstances give me the investment capital to do something even greater in life. And this was the fundamental, unspoken machlokes, dispute, between Yaakov and between Yosef. Yosef says, adjust your thinking. First thing, adjust your thinking. Kinashani, you're not a victim, but your circumstances give you the investment capital to be something even greater than you ever could have been. Once you adjust your thinking, you'll go on to be successful. Yaakov says, no, it's very hard to adjust thinking. Yosef, I'm an older man than you. Maybe that worked for you, but that doesn't work for most people. To tell people to adjust the way they think is very difficult. But what I couldn't do right now is adjust the way that I act. I'm going to show myself that despite all of my difficult circumstances, I can still do something great. Right now. Right now, ki efrani elokim be'eretz ani. Right now, I'm going to do something great and amazing. I'm going to show myself that I am capable of engaging in dynamic, productive activity. And once I show myself that I'm not done and out, that I could still produce, that I could still do, then what? Ki nashani elokim es kalam ali. Once I show that I could still do great things, then I could adjust my mindset to believe that I'm not a victim to my circumstances. Instead, my circumstances provide me with the investment capital to accomplish something great. So if we bring this all together, when we give our children these brachos, now we begin to understand that the truth is, when Yaakov Avinu says, Becha yivarech Yisrael le'emor yisimuch lo'em ke'efrayim chemenashe, so yes, we saw approaches that understood that what Yaakov Avinu was saying was for our children to mamish be like Ephraim and Menashe, for our children to be happy for the successes of the other, and to never use those successes, God forbid, to look down on the other. That our children should be like Ephraim Menashe, should be part of greater society, make a rosha, make an impact on greater society, but still maintain fidelity and allegiance to Judaic values and morals. But according to the last two approaches, Yaakov Avinu is not really talking about Menashe and Ephraim as people, but rather he's using them ultimately again as an approach to life. Either of Tzvi Yehuda telling us that we're telling our children, life is not a straight path. Do not expect tranquility. Expect ups and downs. Expect wins and losses. And when you win, rejoice. And when you lose, just get back on the field. But life is the crisscrossing of the hands. Life is the grabbing onto the heels. Life is filled with ups and downs. Accept it. Embrace it. And then maximize your circumstances. We tell our children, like Rav Hirsch said, that we are not victims of our circumstances. Instead, Kinashani Elokim es kolam ali, our circumstances provide us with the investment capital to be able to fully self-actualize and become the best version of ourselves. But the machlokis, the life dispute that was unfolding right there in Goshen thousands of years ago, was a proper approach to life. Yosef saying, shift your mindset when it comes to adversity, and then you'll accomplish great things. Yaakov Avinu saying, no, shift your behaviors, and then you'll be able to shift your mindset. Show yourself that you can still do something great, even now with all the challenges, and then you'll be able to shift the way you think about your adversity. Who's correct, Yaakov or Yosef? So the answer, of course, is both. Now, amazing enough, we know that we give the bracha to our children like Yaakov gave it. So at the end of the day, it seems to be that although, of course, Yosef, you can't argue with Yosef, it worked for him, but we follow and practice Yaakov Avinu. That when faced with adversity in life, I know that I have to change the way I think about my challenges. And I have to stop being a victim and stop trying to forget and instead recognize that those circumstances provide me with the investment capital to accomplish something great. But I know that I'm not going to be able to shift my mindset just because I want to. So therefore, again, Ephraim comes before Menashe. When you find yourself in the midst of difficulty and adversity, do something good. Do something positive. Because with that one little act, what you are demonstrating to yourself is, I am not down and out. I am not down and out. I am still alive and kicking. I can do good things. I could affect change. I can make a difference. And once I realize that, then I can look back on my past tumultuous and sometimes traumatic circumstances and say, you know what? I will not let you victimize me. Instead, I must realize that those circumstances provide me with the investment capital and with the ticket to get to the place I could have never gotten without them. May we be Zochem Yerz Hashem to be able to turn our difficulties into investment capital and in Yerz Hashem go on to accomplish great things. This is our last shiur for the semester, so thank you all for being part of this. We'll continue. And also, I want to thank everyone this shiur for the incredibly generous Hanukkah gift. It was much appreciated. We should be Zochem Yerz Hashem to learn for many more shiurim to come.